The colonists in New England faced an uphill battle in turning the region's vast forests into farmland. They had to fell massive trees and contend with rocks strewn through the soil they aimed to plow. So, stone by stone, they stacked the rocks left over from glaciers into waist-high walls. Each year, frost heaves pushed still more stones to the surface, which some of those early farmers said was the work of the devil. Generations later, farmers returned time and again to repair the walls as the years went by. That's the subject of Robert Frost's famous poem, The Mending Wall, read here by the poet himself.
Mending wall. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen groundswell under it, and spills the upper boulders in the sun and makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing. I have come after them and made repair where they have left not one stone on a stone, but they would have the rabbit out of hiding to please the yelping dogs. The gaps I mean, no one has seen them made or heard them made, but at spring mending time we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill, and on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again. We keep the wall between us as we go, to each the boulders that have fallen, to each. And some are loaves, and some so nearly balls, we have to use a spell to make them balance. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game, one on a side. It comes to little more. There where it is, we do not need the wall. He is all pine, and I am apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. Before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out and to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly, and I'd rather he said it for himself. I see him there, bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand like an old stone savage armed. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me, not of woods only in the shade of trees. He will not go behind his father's saying, and he likes having thought of it so well, he says again, good fences make good neighbors.
Those stone walls of Robert Frost's verse still exist in southern New Hampshire, as do thousands like it across New England. Made mostly of granite, these walls serve as windows into the geological and cultural history of the region. I went for a walk through an old farmstead with a stone wall expert to learn more. So we're here in Nottingham, New Hampshire, at a 1755 farmhouse that's surrounded by stone walls. And we're joined now by Robert Thorson. He's a professor of geology at the University of Connecticut, and he's author of Stone by Stone, The Magnificent History in New England's Stone Walls. Welcome to Living on Earth, Professor.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, how did you first get involved studying stones?
Well, I moved here from Alaska, and I had grown up in the sort of Scandinavian Midwestern, upper Midwest heritage, where you don't see any stone walls whatsoever. And I moved here from Alaska in 1984, and I thought, well, I'm hired as a landscape archaeologist and a geologist and a scientist to teach, and I thought I'd better go get myself a look at stone walls. And so I went to the Natchog State Forest, which is nearby in eastern Connecticut where I was working, and I just started walking a traverse. And I was going up over one after another and another and another stone walls, and it just struck me that day. What are these things? Why are they the size they are, the color they are, the mass they are, the continuity they are, the pattern they are? All those questions that a trained scientist would ask about them.
So now, stone walls are all over the region. Who made these walls?
If you're talking about the abandoned field farm landscape of the 19th and 18th century, then almost entirely it's the people who owned the land and were using money from the land to do things. If you're talking about Gilded Age or 1920s or Edwardian or even late Victorian, you know, when you get past the zenith of New England's agriculture, then most of the walls are being built by immigrant work parties for very low pay, but the money came from somewhere else. And so you end up with a nice, tidy, long, uniform degree of construction that an architect might recognize. The walls that I like are the ones built by the people on the land because there's an ecological component to them, a human ecological component.
Let's go up the wall a little further because I want to ask you about the ecology of what's in these walls today. So many of these stone walls obviously were abandoned. This farm stopped farming livestock probably a century and a half ago. But you say that these are important parts of our ecosystem. What makes them so important in the ecosystem?
Well, if you look at the stone wall right in front of us, you don't see any surface moisture. And you never will unless it's raining or you're getting snowmelt. These are very, very dry. They're effectively deserts. You know, they're hollow, open spaces that animals can live that don't exist on the woodland floor. It's also a corridor. You know, if you wanted to move along your territory and you were a fox or you were a squirrel or you were a cat, a bobcat or a fisher cat, you could cruise along the top of the wall and see more. You'd be more exposed if you were a predator. If you were prey, you'd likely scurry along beneath the edge of the wall and you get cover. So as boundaries, as corridors, and as habitat, stone walls have a life all their own.
And the geologic story here?
Well, if you accept that human beings are geologic agents, which I do, being the strongest one, then they're part of that geologic story. If you were to just say, okay, what happened here since glaciation? we're about it. I mean, glaciation and then human activity, those are the two dominant events that have happened here on the landscape to shape and change the landscape. It's not to say that other people didn't live here for a long time, but these are the main shapers. And one is glacial in origin, climatically driven, and one is human in origin, economically driven.
Thor, talk to me about the famous stone walls here in New England.
I think the most famous one is Robert Frost's Mending Wall, because people in Iowa know about that wall. People in Florida know about that wall. And it's one of New England's real treasures, that poem. And I've been to Derry a number of times, and I've talked there and explored and investigated the Mending Wall. It turns out the Mending Wall is a combination of two different walls. That poem was written when Frost was in England. It was one of his earliest ones. And he's writing it from memory, and he garbled together two things, whether intentionally or not, that are really important to the New England psyche. One is the idea is the maintenance, structure, order, you know, keeping stone on stone, mending the wall. And the other, of course, is territorialism, the fences that we erect between ourselves and our communities and otherwise. And he really dwells nicely on both of those. The Mending Wall, the poem, has both the boundary wall and the precarious stones as round as balls or loaves. But the actual walls on that property are very distinct. One is a boundary and one is a place where you can hardly stack a stone, and they don't map on top of each other.
Philosophically, what do you think of his point that there's something that doesn't like a wall?
That something is all of nature itself that doesn't like a wall, because a wall is created, you know, with intent by human beings. For whatever reason, it's going to come down. And to me, that's nice. I love the old, abandoned, lichen-crusted, closed-canopy, forested walls in the age of the Anthropocene, because they tell us that in some places the Anthropocene impact is already being rehealed. And the wildness-seeking person in me likes seeing that.
So some would say that stone walls helped win the American Revolution. Why would they say that?
The number one reason that they would say that would be because the colonists, the ragtag minutemen, you know, used the walls for cover, and they were very hard to pick off by the British marching in columns down the road. On a deeper level, you could argue that the walls are expedient parts of the farms that gave the beef and the butter and the bacon and the bread that fed those armies. We know that armies don't march on an empty stomach. Also, I think there's a territorial boundary element. I think that just seeing a stone wall, you know, makes you feel more secure. It makes you feel enclosed. It makes you feel contained. It makes you feel separate. So you could say that at a psychological bedrock level, they helped with the idea of separateness.
Robert Thorson is a professor of geology at the University of Connecticut. Thor, thanks so much for taking the time with us.
It's been a pleasure. What could be nicer than being in the woods surrounded by stone walls?